Time for the Big Picture program with AB Dawji. We welcome him on the program. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
How are you on this good Friday morning?
Alhamdulillah. All energetic after my workout on the rowing machine.
What do you have for us first up? The story that caught your eye.
Well, Sheikh, as usual, we start with the bizarre stories that made it into the newspapers. The strange, the weird, the wonderfully loony, the outrageous, the shockingly incredible, the mind-blowing, over-the-top, ridiculously impossible level that Homo sapiens can descend to. Real life, as I always say, is often stranger than fiction. Many of the individuals featured in this part of the program invariably show clear signs that their mothers did not provide them with badam dood when they were growing up. Badam dood deficiency has now been recognized by leading scientists as a serious contributor to stunted brain development, leading to poor intellectual capacity. This condition has now been noticed in leaders such as George Bush and Donald Trump. Badam dood deficiency is now regarded as more serious than mad cow disease. And today's story relates to a chap who could be suffering from BDD. Let me read you this story. And for that, we go to the good old US of A. A Florida man shot himself in the arm while cleaning his gun, but didn't notice that, according to WCTV report, Michael Blevins, 37 years old, was cleaning his .22 caliber pistol on Thursday when he fell, causing the gun to go off. He didn't notice he had shot himself until 3 days later when he changed his shirt and only then noticed the bullet hole in his arm. Volusia County Sheriff's deputies, that the police, were called to the hospital on Saturday where Blevins had checked in. He told police he was holding the weapon up against his chest to protect his dog from jumping up near it. When he stood up, he felt a sharp back pain, causing him to fall face down into a glass coffee table. Police accompanied Blevins to his home, where they determined the shooting was an accident. Dear listeners, there are two aspects of this story that are quite surprising. Firstly, he shot himself and only realized this 3 days later when he saw the hole in his arm. That is so weird.
Unbelievable.
But what is even worse is the line in the article, he didn't notice he had shot himself until 3 days later when he changed his shirt. He changed his shirt 3 days later. Good heavens. And also, yuck, yuck, what a dirty, stinking mampara. Maybe, he was also wearing the same shirt for 3 days before he got shot, or maybe even more. He shot himself in the arm, fell on a glass coffee table, stood up, forgot the whole thing, and carried on as normal. Look, I don't want to condemn this guy too strongly. And I don't know if it happens to you, dear listeners, but recently, I found that I'm thinking about something as I walk into the kitchen, then I open the fridge and stand there wondering what I had come to fetch. It's quite troubling, considering that I'm only 40 years old. Very troubling indeed. But let me share another story with you. But it's quite a serious one. Although I must say somewhat bizarre. Headline says, doctors mystified by brothers who become paralyzed at night. And it's from Islamabad. The two brothers have come to be known as the Solar Kids, and the case has mystified Pakistani doctors. Aged 9 and 13, the boys are normal, active children during the day. But once the sun goes down, they both lapse into a vegetative state, unable to move or talk. Javed Akram, a professor of medicine at the Pakistan Institute of Medical Sciences, told the Associated Press on Thursday that he had no idea what was causing the symptoms. We took this case as a challenge. our doctors are doing medical tests to determine why these kids remain active in the day but cannot open their eyes, why they cannot talk or eat when sun goes down, he said as he visited the brothers at his hospital. Akram said the government was providing free medical care for the siblings who come from an impoverished family. The brothers are undergoing extensive medical testing in the capital, Islamabad, and samples of the blood have been sent overseas to overseas specialists for further examination. Researchers are also collecting soil and air samples from the family's home village. Mohammed Hashim, the father of the two brothers, comes from a village near Quetta, the capital of southwestern Balochistan province. He and his wife are first cousins, and two of the six children died at an early age. The other two children have not displayed any unusual symptoms. His simple theory is this: I think my sons get energy from the sun. But doctors have already dismissed the idea that sunlight plays a role, noting that the boys can move during the day even when kept in a dark room or during a rainstorm. During the day, 13-year-old Shuaib Ahmed and his brother Ahmed Rashid did indeed seem normal, active, energetic and cheerful as they emerged from their hospital room on Friday and walked to a nearby canteen to have tea. Shuaib Ahmed told the Associated Press, "I will become a teacher," while his younger brother said he wants to become an Islamic scholar, a Maulana. So, what do you think of that, dear listeners? Actually, you can see this video of these brothers. I just put in the words in Google, Brothers Paralyzed News 24. Brothers Paralyzed News 24. And you will see the boys full of energy during the day and totally limp and almost lifeless at night. Absolutely amazing. The article says that both lapse into a vegetative state. Well, one auntie told me yesterday, "Hey, Dawji, that's not surprising at all. Every Saturday afternoon, my husband gets into a vegetative state when he sits in the lounge watching sports on TV. The only time I know he is alive is when he says, 'Amina, bring me a bowl of nuts and a big tumbler of mineral.'"
What's happening in the Middle East?
Before I discuss that, I want to ask you, dear listeners, two simple questions. First one, tomorrow is a very important birthday. It's actually the 68th birthday. Can you guess? No, it's not mine. I told you I'm just about 40 years old now. Okay, while you are thinking about that, let me ask you this. If you encountered a very beautiful woman and you really liked her, and upon investigating who she is, you discover that she was married, what would you do? Would you try very hard to get her away from her husband? If you did, what would be the outcome? And the answer is that you will be seriously looking for trouble. Correct? I think that is pretty obvious. So, did you get the answer about whose 68th birthday it is tomorrow? No? Okay. And all along I thought that Joburg people were very smart, eh?
Yeah.
The answer is that on the 14th of May 1948, at exactly 4 p.m., David Ben-Gurion, who became the first Prime Minister of Israel, announced the creation of the State of Israel. So, and the next question was, what would you do if you found that the woman you like is already married? If you pursued her, you would be looking for trouble. There is a story that in 1897, a delegation of Jews went from Europe to Palestine to see whether it was a place suitable for Jews. The delegation went back and reported this: the bride is beautiful, but she is married to another man. The Jews in Europe who wanted to go to Palestine, that is the Zionists, were given the message that the land they wanted belonged to someone else. So did that stop them from going to Palestine? Not a chance. And what was the consequence of such action, of going for someone else's woman? Trouble. Yes, trouble. Lots of it. this whole idea of taking the land belonging to another people to establish a country for Jews is known as Zionism. But wait, according to Zionists, citizens of this new country, they fought a war 68 years ago. It was known as the War of Independence. And 2 days ago, they celebrated this great event. War of Independence? Independence from whom? When you hear about fighting a war of independence, you have an idea that you have a people of a country fighting to chase out foreign occupiers. For example, Indian people fought against the British in India, or the Algerians fought the French to get them out, or Frelimo fought the Portuguese to get them out of Mozambique, and so on. The indigenous people, the natives of the land, the original inhabitants of the land, getting their independence by booting out the colonizers. So how is it that Israelis celebrate or commemorate what they refer to as the War of Independence? You, dear listeners, are so silly not to understand such a simple thing. You see, they believe that they are the original owners of the land. They were there 2,000 years ago. Then many people came and occupied their land. And the Palestinians also came from I don't know where and occupied their land. Right? Never mind that the Palestinians were on the land for 500 years or 1,000 years. They are regarded as occupiers, colonialists, and so have to leave the land. So these Zionists came back to their land, fought the British who conquered the land, chased them away, and chased most of the Palestinians away so that they could free their homeland from these occupiers, get their independence. So now, dear BDD listeners, you see how easy it is to understand why it is referred to as the War of Independence. Hey, but you people are so dumb, eh? Let's do a 2-minute history of Palestine. From the time that the Zionists decided to return to, as they called it, their homeland. Hey, you know what? I just thought of something. There is an expression that has been used over the past 60 years. It's called the right of return. What does it mean? Let me read the statement. The right of return is a principle which is drawn from the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, intended to enable people to return to and re-enter their country of origin. So, this is a human right. Those Palestinians who were chased out of their homes and lands have a right to return to their homes and lands. 68 years later, the 5 million or so Palestinians are still outside of Palestine waiting to get back. But guess what? It's the Zionists who have taken the idea of the right of return as applying to them. It's their land has always been, God gave it to them, so they have the right of return. And so any Jew in any part of the world can consider that land which was known as Palestine is now, known as Palestine and is now Israel, they consider that as, any Jew anywhere in the world considers it as his homeland. And if he decides to return, he can fly over, touch down in Tel Aviv, and be given citizenship immediately. Actually, even if he or his grandfather or great-grand-great-grandfather were not born or never visited Israel, they are always regarded as being de facto citizens of Israel. It's just a formality to officially give them citizenship when they arrive. So nice, eh? They have the right of return. Where is George Orwell when we need him so badly? But I digress, dear listeners.
Yes.
What was I talking about? See what I mean when I told you about opening a fridge door and wondering what is it that I came for? Oh, yes, the 2-minute history of Palestine. So, at the end of the 1800s, the Jews in Europe had a big meeting in Switzerland, and at this Istima, they decided that they wanted to make their homeland in Palestine. But the bride was beautiful, but married to another man. At that time, there were 600,000 Palestinians living there, and they owned 98% of the land. Of course, there were about 54,000 Jews living there, and all of them were living happily together. But the Zionists were after the bride, the land of Palestine. And so the groom, the husband, the Palestinians had to make way. The First World War ended in 1918, and the British occupied Palestine. The Zionists made Palestine, they moved to Palestine with the help of the British, and so the thousands of them began pouring in from Europe. The British allowed them to go there, thousands and thousands. As I told you, if you try to take someone's beautiful wife, you are looking for trouble. And the Zionists knew this in advance. So right from the start, they formed themselves into gangs. By that, I don't mean the Dacha gangs that you get in Overport. No, these were well-armed, well-trained militia groups ready to do battle. The Haganah gang, the Irgun, the Stern gang, and so on. The objective was clear, to free their, well, what they call their homeland from both the British and the Palestinians. And so the Tamasha started, a bloody conflict, British killing the Palestinians and Jews, and the Jews killing the Palestinians and the British, and the Palestinians killing British and Jews. Hundreds and hundreds and thousands died. Eventually, the British announced that they were going to leave on the 15th of May, 1948. In the 6 months before the British left, the Zionist militia were extremely strong. They spread out all over Palestine, cleared out over 500 Palestinian villages, and chased out 750,000 Palestinians from their homes and land. And then on the 14th of May, 1948, the day before the British left, the State of Israel was declared on 78% of what was known as historic Palestine. 78%, eh? Arab armies from surrounding countries came in last minute to help their brothers. Too late, but Jordan managed to capture half of Jerusalem and the West Bank, and Egypt captured a small piece of land near the sea known as the Gaza Strip. So that part captured by the Arabs made up just 22% of historic Palestine. So Israel was born 68 years ago on 78% of Palestine. And the world recognized Israel. In fact, the U.S. President Harry Truman declared that he recognized Israel as a country after David Ben-Gurion made the announcement. So, dear listeners, how long after the birth did Truman say that he welcomes this new baby? 1 week? 2 days? Wrong. It was exactly 11 minutes after Ben-Gurion declared the birth. 11 minutes. Wow. And Truman recognized Israel without even knowing what its borders were. Incredible, right? And so the world, at least most of the Western world, recognized Israel, and Israel prospered and grew strong. But Israel was not satisfied with the 78%. So a war was started by Israel. Let me say this very clearly. There's enough historical evidence to show that Israel started the war with the surrounding Arab countries. Moshe Dayan, the Israeli general with the eye patch, actually admitted this when he mentioned how Syria was provoked into war. And Israel captured the Golan Heights. Anyway, this was known as the Six-Day War in 1967, and Israel captured Gaza and the West Bank. Khalas, it's all over. It got the whole thing. By the way, if you want to know who started what, who is to blame for what, who was there first, and what were the plans of the Zionists, facts and figures, clear, short and sharp. May I suggest a fantastic booklet that has all of this information? I sound very clever, but I get it all from these books here. So it's all stated very clear and concise, in a concise form, clear arguments. Get the booklet. You can easily get it online. Just type in into Google. Listen carefully. Type in these words. The origin of the Palestine-Israeli conflict. and type the words Jews for Justice. Jews for Justice, Berkeley, California, Berkeley University, right? California. Just type in those words. Origin of the Palestine-Israeli conflict, Jews for Justice. That should get you there. You will receive a compact booklet in PDF format so that you can print it out and distribute it. Come on, you lazy lot. I'm not wasting my breath for nothing. Get the book and study it. It's brilliant. I just received a photo on WhatsApp. It shows a group of South African Jews with a large banner in front of them. They're holding a very large banner saying South African Jews and the words Free Palestine. One young lady holds a sign saying, makes me ashamed to be Jewish. A young man has a sign, independence equals Nakba. And actually that says it all. Eh? The Israelis, as I said, celebrated what they refer to as the War of Independence. It happened 68 years ago, 14th May 1948. The British left Palestine the next day, 15th May 1948. The Palestinians commemorate that day as the great tragedy, the great catastrophe, the Nakba. And on that day every year, this Sunday, in fact, thousands of Palestinians will be marching and rallying in the refugee camps in Egypt, Jordan, Gaza, West Bank, Lebanon, Syria, and all around the world, and maybe here even in Johannesburg, and maybe hopefully, inshallah, in Durban also. And if you look carefully, you will see some old people amongst the marchers there in the refugee camps holding up their hands very high. And what do they have in their hands? The keys to their homes from which they were chased out 68 years ago. Very sad indeed. Of course, the whole situation is sad. Taking the bride of another can only mean trouble. It was a very bad decision. It was a decision that was to lead to bloodshed. Did anyone think that when the Zionists in Europe decided to go to Palestine, displace the people and take over their homes and land, that the Palestinians will say, Ahlan wa sahlan, come, welcome, take everything, we will move out. Obviously not. Obviously they will resist and obviously people will die. And 2 days ago, sirens blew all over Israel and people stopped whatever they were doing and stood in silence to honor those who died for Israel. The figure given by the Jerusalem Post, which I read yesterday, is 23,477 Jews died. I don't think that there are any figures of how many Palestinians died. But the sad fact is that people died. Why? Because of a misguided policy, a bad plan, a bad idea, Zionism. Apartheid was a bad idea. Thousands died defending it and thousands died resisting it. Thankfully, it ended in 1994. Zionism has endured for 100 years. It will continue for I don't know how long. And more people on either side will die. Palestinians will not stop their resistance. In fact, things are getting worse. Israel was created 68 years ago on 78% of the land, but in the 22% it captured in 1967, it's doing terrible things. The checkpoints, the house demolitions, the arrests, the uprooting of olive trees, the building of more and more settlements, the confiscation of more and more land. So Israel was created, but instead of just accepting the 78%, just lying low, staying put and not doing any more mischief, it just continues to take more and more and more. My neighbor steals my hose pipe from my yard. I see him watering his garden. That is bad. But I don't do anything about it. Let it pass, I say. Hey, just forget it. But if he throws stones at my house and swears at my kids every day, then you can be sure that I'm going to respond. And so expect the Palestinians to respond to the daily brutality that they suffer. The only way you can have peace is if you have justice. Israel's idea is that we will do terrible things to you, take your land, humiliate you, and so on, and you must not respond. You must not resist. Resistance means violence. And so if you don't resist, we can have peace. Wonderful, isn't it? So, dear listeners, There's only one solution that will stop the killings. Whites died and blacks died because of apartheid. Jews died and are dying. Palestinians died and are dying because of Zionism. There's only one solution for the problem, the South African solution. One nation where everyone is equal in one country, it's known as the one state solution.
Important history lesson this morning. Now we move on to America. What's happening across the Atlantic?
Well, I have a long story, but I think we're running out of time. So let me just give you... I just heard that the BDD clown, Donald Trump, has just backtracked about banning Muslims from entering the United States. Last week he said that he will allow Sajid Khan, the new mayor of London, to enter the U.S. And Sajid said, hey, forget it. Don't make exceptions. It's all or nothing. And yesterday, the Donald said that he was only suggesting that maybe Muslims should be banned from entering the United States. It was just a suggestion. Nothing, not a serious plan or policy or anything of that sort. Let's figure out what's happening and then decide whether to take any action. So, you see, dear listeners, we got it all wrong, eh? He didn't say don't come. And I also wonder when my visa is going to come. Well, I think I'll just stop there with that one.
Light at the end of the tunnel.
By the way, on Tuesday, I will be jetting off to Venice, jolling in the gondolas, then it's off to Athens, Rome, Barcelona, Florence, the Leaning Tower of Pisa, Croatia, Montenegro. So I'm sure, dear listeners, that you will all miss me very much. Well, as for me, not a single thought of you will enter my head, especially when I'm lying on the golden sands of the beach at Mykonos, working on my tan, a darker shade of dark brown. Anyway, let's see what light we got today. I used to have a late-night radio program, and people used to call in. Sometimes it was quite funny. Hello? My name is Muhammad Khan. I'd like to remain anonymous. One lady called, hello, I want to remain enormous. I was tempted to tell her not to go on a diet. Anyway, the quiz programs on radio can be quite hilarious. I came across an article this week in the local papers about the crazy answers that people give on quiz programs in Britain. On various radio programs. Let me read a few of them to you. Jeremy Paxton is a very famous guy. And on BBC Two, he said, he asked the question, what is another name for cherry pickers and cheesemongers? And the contestant answered, homosexuals? Jerry Paxton said, no. There are regiments in the British Army who will be very upset with you. Here's on BBC Two, Jamie Tixon, he asked a question, where do you think Cambridge University is? And the contestant said, geography isn't my strong point. And the presenter says, there's a clue in the title. And the contestant says, Leicester? Here's another one. On the Late Show, on the BBC, Alex Trensky asked the question, what is the capital of Italy? And the contestant says, France. And the presenter says, France is another country, try again. And the contestant says, Benidorm. And then the presenter says, wrong, sorry, let's try another question. In which country is the Parthenon? And the contestant says, sorry, I don't know. And the presenter said, just guess a country then. And the contestant says, Paris? Yes, Beacon Radio in Wolverhampton. DJ Mark says, for 10 points, what is the nationality of the Pope? And Ruth, the contestant, answers, I think I know that one. Is he Jewish? And here's another one from the University Challenge. The presenter said, what was Gandhi? I like this one, eh? This one I like. What was Gandhi's first name? And the contestant answers, Goosey? Kusi gander. Here's another one. Presenter, what happened in Dallas? You know, the President Kennedy was assassinated in the city of Dallas. So the presenter asked, what happened in Dallas on November 22nd, 1963? And the contestant answers, I don't know. I wasn't watching it then. another one here on FM, Links FM. Presenter says, which is the largest Spanish-speaking country in the world? And the contestant says, Barcelona. The presenter said, I was really after the name of a country. The contestant said, I'm sorry, I don't know the names of any countries in Spain. James O'Brien says, how many kings of England have been called Henry? And the contestant says, well, I know there was a Henry the Eighth. Is it three? Okay, here's the last one, and I think it's very relevant. BBC Radio Newcastle. Paul Weppert asked the question, how long did the six-day war between Egypt and Israel last? And the contestant, after a very long pause, said, 14 days?
Unbelievable.
I tell you, these people were all Badam dude deprived. But let me give you a last one, right, Mohan?
Yes, go ahead.
Very quick one. Actually, this is an old one. I said it before.
Golden oldie. Ago.
Not cold, but. A sign was hung outside an office window here in Durban. Vacancy. Secretary wanted. Must type 70 words a minute. Must be computer literate. Must be bilingual. And at the bottom of the sign it said, an equal opportunity employer. Well, a dog was walking down the street and he saw the sign. He looked at it for a moment, stared at it, then he pulled the sign down, took it in his mouth, and walked into the manager's office. He put the sign onto the floor and pointed with his paw at the sign, making it clear that he wished to apply for the job. The office manager laughed and said, hey, I can't hire a dog for this job. The dog pointed to the line where he says, an equal opportunity employer. So the manager said, okay, take this letter and type it. The dog went off to the computer and returned a minute later with the finished letter, perfectly typed out. The manager said, okay, all right, here's the problem. Write a computer program for it and run it. 3 minutes later, the dog came back with the correct answer, everything, computer program, everything written out. The manager still wasn't convinced. You know what? I can't hire you for this position. You are not bilingual. And the dog looked up at the manager and said, meow.
Jazakumullah khair, all the best for your trip, and we look forward to chatting to you perhaps on the trip or after that.
Jazakallah, Sheikh Dr. Habibi.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
And we'll deal with the weekly edition of the Big Picture program, bringing us on to 10 minutes to 9.
The Big Picture program was sponsored by Steering Auto Inspector Car in Benoni, the thinking person's car dealership. Steering Auto, the home of pre-loved cars.